The Ohio Farm Bureau Federation presents When Neighbors Meet. This past week, representatives of the Ohio Farm Bureau spent 3 days in Washington talking with their congressmen about farm problems and pending legislation, as well as spending time in briefing sessions with experts in the fields of agriculture, foreign affairs, politics, and federal legislation. This was the 21st annual trip of this kind, and one considered by many to be the most successful. One entire morning was devoted to the face-to-face meeting of Farm Bureau representatives with the congressmen from their respective districts to discuss such problems as S-109, the so-called marketing rights bill, the widespread destruction of crops by red-winged blackbirds, the increase of disruptive dairy imports and their effect on domestic prices, the International Grains Agreement, and various other federal programs that affect the Ohio farmer. Perhaps one of the best explanations of these problems, especially the marketing rights bill and the dairy import situation, was given the Ohio delegation by Herbert Harris, Legislative Counsel for the American Farm Bureau Federation.
You can talk a lot about philosophy of government, about philosophy of economics, and what have you. But when you get right down to it, when you talk about changing the bargaining power between farmer and processor, then you start talking about something that people can get real excited about. Now, I've seen groups here in town tell us what a great outfit Farm Bureau is and how they admire our philosophy. We believe in the market system, and we're not for relying on government for controls and subsidies and what have you. And they admire this attitude a great deal, and they say real nice things about us. But when we start talking about, look at fellas, we believe in the market system, but we intend to meet you on equal grounds. We intend to get every darn penny out of the market that is coming to us. And you know, it's just surprising how their attitude changes. You know, they say, those doggone Farm Bureau folks, they've stopped preaching and they've gone to meddling now. We've recognized in Farm Bureau, and you folks in Ohio especially, have recognized the need for bargaining associations. And we've understood the purpose. The purpose is to determine what the market price is and to get it. Now, our purpose isn't to run the market price up. Our purpose isn't to gouge anybody or take advantage of anybody. Our purpose is to know as well as the processor what the market price is, and then to deal with the processor on as nearly equal terms as possible so that we can get what the market price says. Not what he says it is, but what we know it is. Now, when you start doing this, you can rely on two different approaches, and you have the choice to make. You can say, well, we're going to take this bargaining approach, and we're going to make sure we've got bargaining power because we're going to pass a law that says processors have got to bargain with us. And that's going to be the simple way to cope with it. Now, we haven't chosen this route. We've said that no processor has to bargain with us. We've said that we're going to organize in a manner. We're going to get enough growers signed up as to any individual crop that it's going to be in the best interest of the processor to bargain with us. We're going to do the organizational job so that he has to bargain with us if he's going to deal with the best growers, if he's going to get the supply and the quality that he needs. Now, if you choose this latter approach, you wonder why a lot of folks don't join in with you with some enthusiasm. And you turn to folks who have talked about their great belief in the market system and say, now look it. We have always recognized that government setting prices and doing the marketing is wrong. Then why not be enthusiastic about an organization saying, we're putting the emphasis on doing the marketing ourselves. And we can say to them, look it, there are folks, there are proposals that say that you should be made by law to bargain with us. Why don't you support us when we say, no, we don't want that approach? We want to do it on a voluntary basis. Well, this answer is a simple one. The processor has a relationship with most of his growers now, where he can tell them individually what the market price is. And he can play one grower off against the other if he chooses to. And he can make sure that he has a position, a bargaining position, that is superior to the growers. And we can't expect him to voluntarily accept a change in that bargaining position. This is something that we have got to go out and get ourselves, despite his opposition. And so when we talk about legislation in this field, we should make up our mind to one point. It is controversial legislation. There are going to be folks that are opposed to it. And for any congressman or any senator, this means one thing. Introducing or supporting this bill in the terms of Washington is not a free ride. Now, a free ride is when you can introduce legislation or support a position without getting anybody mad at you. A congressman or a senator is probably going to get somebody mad at him if he introduces or supports this kind of legislation. So he does you a great service when he introduces this legislation. And we should make it clear to him that we understand that he is doing this. But we should also make it clear to him that we want a choice made as to whether or not he is for farmers obtaining this equal bargaining position with processors. Now let me run over briefly what the history of this legislation is, because it's important to understand. We introduced S-109 in its original form over 3 years ago. We let it sit to have it viewed, to have it understood, to have our position understood. Last year it was introduced again, and it moved to hearings on the Senate side. And various folks came in and found fault with different aspects of it. Now, the National Canners Association said this legislation is no good. It works an unfair hardship on us. Now, this is understandable. They are representing the processor, and they don't want the bargaining position changed. It's understandable, in the short run at least, that they would say we would rather not have any legislation. But we had other folks in agriculture and elsewhere that made some complaints about various provisions of the bill. And so the bill was then taken and revised to reflect most of the criticisms that were made in regard to the bill, especially some other agricultural organizations criticized some aspects of it. The Department of Agriculture said there were three aspects of it that should be changed. And so when we redrafted it, we put in all the changes that the department wanted, and we put in all the changes that we felt were necessary and appropriate that other organizations in the agricultural field felt would improve it. We made a concerted attempt to get agriculture together on this. The bill was introduced, these amendments were introduced again, and a second set of hearings were held in the Senate Agriculture Committee. And the Congress adjourned last year without any action having been taken. So now we've come up with a new session. We've had the bill reintroduced in a form that most agricultural organizations now support. National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, National Milk Producers Federation, Even the Grange and the Farmers Union have indicated that they support this legislation. Now, we have not gained support from the National Canners Association as yet. And if we want to wait until we gain support from them, then my children, or their children, may be able to get benefits out of this legislation, but you and I won't. Now, we have specific provisions in this legislation that we have made illegal, but they all relate to membership in a bargaining association. And I want to make this point very clear, because we have opponents that have every right to oppose this legislation, but they do not have a right to misrepresent it. And you're liable to have a congressman repeat to you criticisms about the bill, which are not accurate. You know, everybody doesn't play the legislative game completely fair. And so we have to be prepared to counteract unfair criticism. Now, for example, this bill would outlaw discrimination against a producer, but only if that discrimination is based on that producer's membership in a bargaining association. Now, we've had folks to say, now, this would force a processor to give contracts to every grower, even if he's a poor grower, even if his product is poor quality. Why, of course it doesn't. For a grower to come under this provision, he would have to go into court on his own or with his association. He would not only have to prove discrimination, he would have to prove that the discrimination was because of his membership in a bargaining association. This would be a difficult thing to prove, but he would bear that burden of proof. Now, why would anyone then say that this would hamper a processor in choosing the growers they wanted as far as as basing it on quality or convenience or what have you? It wouldn't. We have other provisions in the bill that prohibit activities of the processor, but all of them geared to this membership or the inducement to cancel a membership in a bargaining association. What do we ask of government in this regard? We say the job of organizing is ours. The job of getting recognition from the processor is ours. The job of bargaining for a price or for other contract terms is ours. All that we ask is that a processor not be able to use those unfair tactics of duress or coercion or boycott to scare a producer from entering into a contract in an association of producers. This is all that we ask to be removed. We want rules of fair play here so that farmers can organize to bargain in an effective and a modern manner. There may be a time, there may be a place where the pressure will grow in agriculture for more extreme provisions. And I truthfully believe that it's in the best interest not only of growers, but of the processors, to recognize now that rules of fair play are appropriate, so that bargaining associations on a voluntary basis, on a non-governmental basis, can operate, so that they in the future will not have forced down their throat and ours a government-dominated bargaining process. I think in this fight, in S-109, that Farm Bureau has its greatest responsibility, and that we as farmers have our most significant fight as we look to the future. We're not asking for help or for subsidies or for crutches. We're asking to meet in the marketplace on equal terms, and that's all. Let me turn now to another issue, which is not as important, but is publicized quite a bit. And this is the issue in regard to dairy imports. We've all heard and seen a great deal of publicity about the increase of dairy imports over the past year. They're a matter worthy of great concern for any dairy farmer and for any farm organization that represents dairy farmers. Let me describe briefly what happened. Since 1953, we've had import quotas on most of our dairy products, cheeses and butter and milk. And this meant that countries could export at just a limited quantity, a rather restricted quantity, of dairy products to the United States. I don't have to tell you that butter prices in the United States have been such in relationship to competitive products that there has been a draw of folks trying to get butter into our market in one form or another. But we had a strict and a restrictive quota on butter. And so human ingenuity being what it is, an exporter someplace decides, well, now if we melt down the butter and come up with a butter oil, that won't be described as butter and you can get it inside the United States. And this is what they did in the early 50s. When they did, we went back to the Tariff Commission under the law and told them that this was going on. A rather restrictive quota was then placed on butter oil. And this operated for a while. But the human mind also operated, and human ingenuity was not yet to be outdone. And so an exporter someplace, he happened to be in New Zealand, said, now if I take butter oil and mix it with sugar, it's then a processed item, and I can come in outside the butter oil quota. And so he put the term Exelon across the package and put 15% sugar and 85% butter fat, mixed it together, and said this can be used for ice cream in the United States, but it's not butter, it's not butter oil, it's a processed product. And this started coming in. And so we went back to the Tariff Commission, and the Tariff Commission reacted promptly on this, I must say. They said there's no history of importing this product. We will put an embargo, a zero quota on Exelon. Say that any product containing 45% more of butter fat will be restricted from coming into the United States. Zero. And so this operated, these restrictions, except the mind of man and human ingenuity continued to operate also. And I don't have to tell you that somebody someplace came up with a product containing 44% butter fat and 55% sugar, and started exporting it to the United States. He called it Junex. And it started coming in and increased quantities. The Secretary of Agriculture at the time, instead of going to the Tariff Commission, as we had before, decided to handle it in a more sophisticated manner. And he said, now I have quota controls over sugar. This contains 55% sugar. And therefore, I'll pass a ruling that any product containing more than 25% sugar is restricted under the sugar quota. And this was done last August. And so the products were then restricted on the basis of 45% butter fat, 25% sugar. Now, I don't have to tell you that the human mind of man and human ingenuity did not stop operating at that point. And before too long, somebody someplace, this happened to be a fellow in Western Europe, came up with a product that contained 44% butter fat, 24% sugar, and the remainder in non-fat milk solids. And this started coming into the country. Now, I think it might be a good idea to pass a law outlawing the human mind and human ingenuity. Or it might be better to have gone to the Tariff Commission immediately after the 45% description did not work and come up with a description that covered all butterfat products and ask for similar restrictions on those. They had acted promptly before, but the Secretary did not do that. And you'll want to know why he didn't do it. I don't know why he didn't do it. I do know that the Secretary last spring was in the business of trying to keep cheese and milk prices down. And for that reason, he recommended to the Tariff Commission that they restudy the cheese quotas and come up with increased quotas for cheddar cheese. Now, he no sooner did that than there was some opposition recorded in the country, and the secretary decided that maybe that wasn't too good of an idea to have recommended. And so when the Tariff Commission came back with their recommendation, they're usually made public within 24 hours, the recommendation was never made public, and no action was ever taken to increase the quota on cheddar cheese. And so the secretary may have found himself in somewhat embarrassing situation to have to go to the Tariff Commission, having not acted on his request to increase the quota, to go back to him at this point and say, by the way, I meant to decrease the quota on dairy products. But for whatever the reason, that action was not taken. And we had a great flurry at the beginning of this session for legislation to place quotas on any product containing more than 5% butterfat. Now, I'm sure everybody thinks that the 5% will operate, but the law has nothing in it about the human mind, human ingenuity, so I don't know what they would do under the 5% rule. I do know that there is a law on the books, Section 22, that says that whenever the Secretary of Agriculture finds that these imports are disrupting a federal program, such as the dairy program, that he can ask for the restrictions, that the Tariff Commission can make their recommendations and restrictions can be imposed promptly. And this is why Farm Bureau wrote to the Secretary of Agriculture on February 16th requesting prompt Section 22 action. Now the Secretary announced about a week after getting this letter that he was indeed going to consider taking such action. Why he has not taken it is open to interpretation. But in my opinion, he should. That's what the law is on the books for, and the law has always operated before. Now, in addition to that, we have information indicating that some of this butterfat sugar mixture coming from Western Europe is being offered for export at about 19 cents there. And they have a butter support program in several of these countries at 65 to 70 cents. Now, this means that they're selling this product into export at what appears to be what we call a dumping price, a price that's much lower than what they're selling it in their own market. We have a law against that in the United States. It's an anti-dumping law. And if a country is doing this, then these anti-dumping duties can be applied. Secretary of Treasury has authority, the Bureau of Customs, Secretary of Treasury has authority to impose anti-dumping duties in a case such as this.
Others appearing before the Ohio delegation included House Minority Leader Gerald Ford of Michigan, Eugene Rostow, Under Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs, Under Secretary of Agriculture John Snitker, Senator Alan Ellender of Louisiana, Chairman of the Senate Agricultural Committee, and Ohio Senior Senator Frank J. Lausche, one of the sponsors of the Marketing Rights Bill now pending in the Senate. The Farm Bureau leaders have returned home, but their job is only beginning. They will now pass all this information on to their fellow Farm Bureau members who they represented. Thus, the Washington congressional trip is not only one of great importance when it is taking place, but continues to benefit Ohio's farmers throughout the rest of the year. This is Dick Howell reporting for the Ohio Farm Bureau. Today's program was presented by the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation to acquaint you with the interests and activities of Ohio's farm people. Next Sunday, at the same time, we'll present another program in this series. Be with us then to find out what happens when neighbors meet.